to talk more about it, we'll bring in friend of the show, Mark Sloboda. Mark is an international relations and security analyst. You can follow Mark on Twitter at Mark Sloboda, the number one, and on his new YouTube channel at The Real Politic with Mark Sloboda. Find him on Facebook /Gramsci. Mark Sloboda, what a stunning turn of events from Turkey the past 2 or 3 days.
Manila, Ted, thanks for having me. It's always an honor and a pleasure to be on the final countdown. Yeah, it seems that NATO, at least in their own mind, managed to get their big announcement propaganda win going into their Vilnius summit that at least will be able to distract the tone of the conversation away from the Kiev regime's badly failing NATO-planned, armed, trained, intelligence-funded offensive against heavily dug-in Russian forces behind echelon defenses in South Ukraine. And in particular is the head of Turkey, the Turkish regime, Erdogan, has finally apparently given in and given the green light to Sweden's ascension to NATO, which he had been holding up even quite vociferously until sometime in the last 24 hours over the issue of Sweden's continued support for Kurdish groups that the Turkish regime regards as terrorists. Sweden traditionally has not, and also over the very public issue of Quran burning in Sweden, in fact, right outside the Turkish embassy, which was given a green light by the Swedish government. And that has occurred several times, at least twice in the last month. But suddenly, after having linked the ascension of Sweden to NATO with Turkey joining the EU, which seemed an automatic impossibility because the EU is not going to let Turkey in after 50 years. There simply is not the sentiment across the EU. That needs to be a consensus issue. And there are other countries other than Sweden with much bigger opposition to that. The domestic political costs and sociological ramifications would be enormous. And we've had French leaders previously say that Turkey will never get into the EU. And actually, the Russian government rhetorically reminded Turkey of that today. And, you know, it might bring to mind the old Peanuts comics for those of us who are old enough to remember Charlie Brown, of Lucy holding the football before him and convincing him one last time to make a go for kicking the football and then always pulling it away at the last moment. But obviously, something has changed Erdogan's mind, and I have a feeling that it's not Sweden and it's not Jens Stoltenberg. The only one with the real power to do that is the U.S. The question is, did they come with the carrot or the stick? Was it threats or was it, promises of something that we don't know about yet? My suspicion is that the carrot traditionally works better with Erdogan. And I've long said on this show and others that Turkey will eventually give the green light for Sweden, as it did for Finland, once it gets what it wants, because it has been using the issue as leverage, as a bargaining chip with NATO. One of the issues that's certainly on the table is Turkey has long been pushing as a replacement for an earlier, more advanced U.S. Aircraft fighter program that was killed when Erdogan purchased the S-400 air defense system from Russia and got sanctioned as a result. He then fell back on an F-16 plan where he would receive a number of new F-16s, a rather substantial one, and he would receive modernization for those that Turkey already had. This was a bid that was apparently backed by Biden, but was being held up by congressional leaders who wanted Turkey to meet other commitments and be more proactive against Russia first. So it is not clear yet to me. There haven't been any signals that such a deal has been reached. But obviously Erdogan got something. And this isn't the first move that Erdogan has made as a conciliatory gesture towards the West in recent days. He also released five Azov neo-Nazi commanders that had been part of a prisoners of war deal with where Turkey brokered it between Russia and Ukraine. And the deal was this was after Mariupol and Azovstal. They were captured by the Russians. They surrendered. And the deal for a prisoners of war exchange was that they would not go home as part of the deal, but they would sit out the conflict in Turkey. Well, Zelensky flew in and obviously some prearranged deal, and he was handed his neo-Nazis and went home and proclaimed them a hero. And Russia is furious. This comes on the heel of Russia announcing that they were going to end the grain deal. They were not going to extend it anyway. They don't have to end it. They're just not going to extend it because the other parties to the deal never met the conditions that they promised Russia for removing the obstacles for getting its own grain and fertilizer to market because of Western sanctions, which, of course, they never had the ability to enforce. So it's a bit of a murky issue. But Turkey was making out well, playing the middleman economically through that grain deal. They might be miffed about that. There's also discussion that Russian and Syrian forces have had a pickup of airstrikes and other military activity in northern Syria, where Turkish forces with their tens of thousands of jihadist allies, basically employed by Erdogan, continue to occupy much of northern Syria. Russia has increased military activity there. And that might also have peeved Erdogan, because those are his proxies, his leverage for his military occupation of northern Syria. So some combination of promises from the U.S. or stick and being peeved at Russia possibly over these two issues may have been factors in Erdogan's kind of abrupt and radical about face on both of these issues.
Well, yeah, Mark, a couple of things there. I mean, we know that because of their purchase, Turkey's purchase of the S-400 missile defense system, that angered the U.S. The U.S. kicked Turkey out of the F-35 program that has had, you know, cost overrun after cost overrun after cost overrun for a decade
now. Actually, in my mind, saving Turkey a lot there because...
Well, but at the same time, the U.S. also says, we're not giving you your refund. Turkey demanded the refund last year, I think, or maybe 18 months ago, something like that. Turkey was like, well, give us our money back. If we're not going to be part of the program, then give us our damn money back. And the U.S., the DOD was like, no. So I wonder if they are offering some of their money back or they're just giving them just the F-16s. And then for the Russian side, I feel like there was a lot of betrayal here, unless, I don't know. I mean, I can't get into the head of Vladimir Putin possibly, but I feel like he would have to feel like he was betrayed a bit by Erdogan, who I get has a very difficult balancing act here, you know, given his geostrategic location of his country. The politics he has to play is difficult, but this has to seem like a betrayal to the Russians, right? Especially with the Azov guys.
Yeah, that was part of a concrete deal. It was part of a prisoners of war exchange. Saudi Arabia was also involved in brokering that, by the way. And the fact that that has been connected with anything else is, you know, as part of some type of horse trade with NATO is certainly going to irk the Russian president. There is a question now how, you know, reliable Erdogan will be in any other deal that he signs. I mean, to try to equate that with the grain deal is a bit of a stretch, because the grain deal was always on condition of lasting for a certain period and then being extended. And it's quite obvious that they have been unable to, the deal has been unable to provide the benefits to Russia from the beginning that it was supposed to. It was never going to be able to, because the countries that sanctioned Russia's grain and fertilizer weren't a party to the deal. It was Turkey and the UN Secretary General's office in Ukraine, not the Western countries that had put the sanctions on Russia for cut it off from SWIFT and put sanctions on its ships and its ability to get insurance for you know, shipping grain and fertilizer to Africa. And ostensibly, the Ukraine deal was, oh, the poor people of the world will suffer if being denied Ukraine's grain. Yeah, I mean, Ukraine was the fifth largest grain exporter to the world, but Russia's the first. And it's also the largest exporter of fertilizer as well. And when it turned out that most of the African grain or the Ukrainian grain over the last year has been going to middle or high income countries, in particular serving as pig fodder in Spain for Spanish ham, the EU is benefiting more than anyone else. And only some 2.6% of Ukraine's grain through the grain deal was actually going to generally impoverished countries. And Russia's grain and fertilizer was still being held up by Western sanctions. It was perfectly obvious that it was not about feeding the poor of the world. It was about benefit to Europe and Ukraine, about, you know, commercial benefit. And so Russia pulling out of that should be perfectly understandable to Erdogan. He has even talked about it himself. But certainly Putin must feel betrayed, and there must be now a greater lack of trust. Not that I would say there has been a high amount of trust between Russia and Turkey, recent history, shooting down of Russian planes and assassinations of Russian ambassadors and them having a small war, direct war in Syria and all, and then in Libya. But they managed their relationship and they found, you know, there were things that they could benefit from each other, particularly economically. They have a lot of economic deals still on the table. So it's not sure how Putin will respond to this. If he seeks to punish Erdogan for breaking this deal, then, you know, a lot of Russian economic ventures with Turkey could be in jeopardy, which is, you know, national interest, a benefit to both countries. At the same time, you know, doing the psychology of Erdogan, you know, is something beyond, you know, easy capability. He is a bit of a cunning, self-interested beast. By the way, he's also, is finalizing a deal to build Ukrainian or Turkish Bayraktar drones in Ukraine. And his own son-in-law is high up in that Bayraktar company that build those drones. So there's a bit of corruption and nepotism in the deal as well. But in Erdogan's mind, he may feel betrayed in some way by what's going on in Syria, where he thinks his occupation of northern Syria is justified and that his jihadist proxy should not be touched, or over the issue of the grain deal. Or it may simply be U.S. pressure, or, you know, I don't know, Erdogan may have woken up on the western side of the bed yesterday.
I love that. That's like that old 1960s JFK comedy album where it's like, I want the Western portion of your Eastern sandwich. If you know that reference, you're old, very old. I wanted to ask you, Mark, about the grand irony that Ukraine's dream of joining NATO, which of course was a principal reason that the current war is going on, is being blocked by Ukraine's biggest patron, which is, of course, the United States. And President Biden has been pretty clear that until the war is over, something that he might be able to help with would be that Ukraine will never be admitted to NATO. What do you make of that? I mean, you know, it's kind of driving Zelensky insane. He's bouncing off the walls, talking about how it's ridiculous that there's no timeline. I mean, besides laughing, is there any other reaction we should have here?
Okay, first of all, I would note that up until the democratically elected Ukrainian government was overthrown by an openly U.S.-backed putsch in 2014, it was not the grand dream of Ukraine to join NATO. In fact, neutrality was written into its constitution that it could not join NATO or other military blocs, meaning the Collective Security Treaty Organization. It was only after the government was overthrown that this neutrality was taken out of the Ukrainian constitution. So the idea of NATO ascension being is only dates to 2014 and the overthrow of the government and the installation of a pro NATO government in Ukraine. I don't think that it is simply the U.S. That has cut off, saying that the Kiev regime will not be able to bring Ukraine into NATO until after the conflict. Germany, and I think there are other sane countries in NATO that would object to it, and NATO does require consensus. Obviously, Poland, the UK, the Baltics, that might be a very different story. But it simply shows that Biden may be senile, but he's not brain dead yet. Because if Ukraine is brought into NATO, while it is still in conflict with Russia, it will immediately invoke Article 5 and NATO will immediately be in direct war with Russia. And even Biden isn't ready for World War III yet. So, I mean, that's only sane and sensible. I mean, maybe there are some NATO countries that think if Ukraine is brought into NATO, that Russia will suddenly just back down and withdraw all their troops. If they do, they're living in a very different reality from the rest of us.
Mark, I'm interested in Zelensky's reaction. I mean, he's acting like a kid who's just found out there's no Santa Claus. Does he not know the very things you just said?
Yes, this is all political rhetoric. He knows this. They all are well aware of this. They've actually admitted as much previously. His constant yelling about this is kind of in negotiations, the idea of a maximalist demand, right? A demand that you know that you're not going to get. So you yell very loudly for it and then be willing to take some lesser thing as a compromise position to basically shut him up. That's what the deal is. He wants the F-16s. He wants the ATACMS. He wants more money. He wants cluster bombs. He just got those. He wants whatever else he can get. He knows. It's about playing to the Ukrainian, at least the portion of the Ukrainian domestic audience that backs his regime, right? Pursuit of NATO in a way of the protection of NATO, of Ukraine being geopolitically dragged into NATO, is part of the whole Maidan project. So, he has to show that he's continuing to pursue it as loudly as possible. And sure, they would love to drag all of NATO into the conflict to fight it for them because they've lost two armies and are well on their way to losing a third. But they know that it's probably not going to happen, bar some extreme circumstance or some, even if NATO, some NATO member, all of NATO is not going to go to war with Russia because there's too many NATO members that would not agree to that. But some of them might. Some of them might send peacekeepers into Western Ukraine at some point down the line. I don't think we're there yet. But that might happen somewhere down the line. And again, I think Zelensky's simply making space by rhetorically, you know, constantly screaming and whining about NATO membership.
We have seen this petulant child that is Zelensky, this bratty kid with parents who have spoiled him. He knows that if he whines and complains enough and throws a fit on the floor, you know, at Walmart because he wants this toy, the parents are going to capitulate because the kid is making a scene in front of everybody. The parents are getting embarrassed. So that's
just to shut him up.
Yeah, just to shut up. Here you go. Here's some cluster munitions. Shut up, you little bratty kid. Here you go. But the real
now, are you happy?
The real thing here is that the other NATO members, let's be real, they're not going to fight. What they want is to drag the United States into the fight. They want the U.S. military to fight. They want U.S. lives to die, not, you know, the Lithuanian peacekeepers. I mean, like, what?
Yeah, sure. And they would rather a U.S. Abrams being destroyed instead of German Leopards, which much of Europe uses. And they would rather F-16s being destroyed instead of Tornadoes or Rafales or, you know, any of the other, you know, domestic aircraft. But the U.S. has been very good at leashing Europe to this war and keeping itself at a distance. It provides what it views as necessary, but keeps other things. And a perfect example of this is the UK and now France are providing cruise missiles, the Storm Shadows. The French version of that is the Scalp, which Macron has just today promised as well. But the US is not providing the ATACMS, for instance.
Mark, quick question. We're running short of time, and so just like 30 seconds, I apologize, but I got to have your take on this. The Ukrainian Constitution calls for Zelensky to call an election by March of next year. I looked this up. Now, it so happens that if you're under martial law, you don't have to hold the election. But how is a country that's marketing itself and framing itself as a bulwark of democracy going to A, suspend an election, or B, hold an election when opposition parties and opposition news media channels are closed or in prison or being tortured or whatever? I mean, how are they going to pull this off? Don't they have to pretend to have a democracy in order to continue to get Western support?
They've been pretending to be a democracy for the last 9 years, and the Western mainstream media has gone along with it. It's not something they need to accomplish. It's the sleight of hand that the Western mainstream media needs to accomplish in presenting it as a democracy, right? I mean, it's obviously not been a democracy since 2014, and it has become noticeably less so under Zelensky in the past few years. Of course, there's not going to be election because there's not even any legal opposition in the country. So that's that's the Western mainstream media's job.
They're like the Democratic Party.
Well, I mean, okay.
Well, I guess. I don't know. I don't know about ours, but I think if you're under martial law, I think there are caveats that you can delay the election.
Right. No, they can, but it's just going to be a bad look.
Why? Well, it hasn't been a bad look for him to ban all the political opposition and declare them traitors. Why would not holding an election? It's Russia, right? That excuses everything.
Well, that's true.
The thing about lies historically is the lies go on until at some point they're no longer sustainable.
I don't know. Who killed JFK?
All right. With that, we got to leave it right there. Very true. Mark Sloboda, thank you so much. Mark Sloboda is an international relations and security analyst. You can follow Mark on Twitter at MarkSloboda1. Check out his new YouTube channel, The Real Politic with Mark Sloboda, and also on Facebook /Gramsci. All right. We are going to take a quick break. When we return, something new I've learned from my friend Ted Rall, underground climate change. We'll tell you about it on the other side of this break here on The Final Countdown.